Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dead Archist OG, and you are back at the Smoke Pit. Today, got a real cool guest, Braxton McCoy, who you guys have probably seen around Twitter. And if you haven't read his book, Glass Factory, you need to get on that. But hey, man. Hey, Braxton, how's it going?
Good, brother. How are you?
Doing good. Just working like crazy and laughing at the weird timeline.
I've been just tweeting way too freaking much because of, but everything's such chaos right now. It's hard to not jump in there.
It's I knew it was going to get dumber. I just didn't know how much.
For real.
I had the lowest of expectations and they just keep breaking it. Man. Yeah. I think I just want to go into the woods and find a wind to go and end it.
Yeah, man, the thing is that I think it's, you know, uncertainty is like none of us human beings just don't like uncertainty. I mean, a whole bunch of the Bible was written about that. And it's the same with like Bhagavad Gita and all these other, you know, religious texts. Like uncertainty is the thing that makes people most uneasy. And we've been in uncertain times for 4 straight years. You know, I mean, Trump's timeline was Russiagate, impeachment, you know, and then coronavirus, basically. So there's been there's just been no stability, and a lot of it has been complete corporate press manufactured nonsense, you know, but it doesn't change the psyche of the average individual. So I can understand why people were like I heard somebody call it Trump fatigue, and I think that's real. Like my grandfather, he brought it up to me. He's just sick of it. And so I do think that a lot of it that we're seeing right now is just the escalation in tension is driven by like you're almost at the end of that uncertainty tunnel. And it's like, sure, maybe a Biden administration sucks if you're a person who's conservative minded, but at least then you kind of know what you got because the corporate press is going to leave you alone. And I think it's a major mistake to give into that, but people are going to, and some have. And
I get it too. Yeah. Like you said, the last 4 years to most people, you know, that's where their chaos starts. For us, it started way earlier. Like 2000.
Right. Right.
I mean, this arc, this story arc, I mean, it's been going on for a very long time, but this, I don't know, this season started in, you know, 2000, and it's been that arc ever since. And that's the thing. You're right. You know, the Bible talks a lot about fear and uncertainty and anxiety and things like that. And that's one thing I don't like about, you know, government in general, is that, you know, the foundation of every government is fear or chaos.
Yeah. I mean, or at least it's a tool that's wielded. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help that we have this so-called fourth estate, which, I mean,
right.
They see themselves, the corporate press, they really do see themselves as a sort of, heroic figure. They understand that they're a collective, but each one of them individually thinks that they make up this like Megatron of the fourth estate, you know, sort of like they're the massive transformer at the end of the game. But the truth is this is what makes them suck the most, is they try to play that collective game, and they do see themselves as a collective or whatever, but each one of them sees themselves as at least aspiring to be, if not the head of that Megatron, you know what I mean? And so it's like will to power, you know, amped up to 11. And I think a lot of the reason that they flipped about Trump was, for one, he showed just how grotesque the establishment really is, because he was able to bring them down to his level, and they always were. They just did it with like nicer words or whatever. So he was able to bring them down to his level, or at least expose what they really were, what they really are. And two, he was able to show you that the corporate elite you know, coastal people, they're not nearly as impressive as they, you know, sort of exude or at least believe themselves to be. And of course, most of us in rural America have fought this for a long time. And that's why they, a lot of people liked Trump because of that, you know, because he was able to show them like, or, and he was, I guess you could say he was rubbing it in their face. You know what I'm saying? That like he exposed them and then was rubbing their face in it over and over again for 4 years. And so they had to do everything they possibly could to discredit the guy. And, you know, you also can't pretend that there was never any smoke anywhere. I mean, there was some smoke. It might've been complete bull crap, but there was smoke, you know? So, I mean, I guess they had sort of an ostensible excuse, but I think that the real driving force behind it all was that Trump was exposing their hearts and they can't handle that. You know, like I saw Sam Harris, who I've liked for years. I don't agree with him politically, but I've liked him for years, read a few of his books, and I think he's great. But I saw him tweet, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was just this very crass, you know, I remember what it was. He said, if you don't get out of the White House, we're going to come in there and grab you by the pussy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, bro, are you kidding? Like, like I think Michael Mouse said, yeah, what have you let this guy do to you? You know, yeah, I don't know, man. It's the whole thing is, I'm sorry for rambling at you already,
no,
but
no, that's what we do here.
The whole thing's a freaking disaster, man. And my fear is that Trump fatigue is setting in. And there's always been, I mean, I talk about it all the time on Twitter, but there's always been weakness in the GOP, and the left has always been really good at exploiting it, because what they do is they use your decorum against you if you're a conservative. I'm not even assuming your politics. I'm just, you know, just speaking for the, in general, you being conservative, you know, trademark in general, right? They use their
values wise. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't even call myself a libertarian anymore, you know, kind of, I don't want to say apolitical, but I'm definitely more in the lower right than anything else.
Yeah, no, I feel that too, man. Totally, completely politically homeless. But what the thing that the left always does is, because many of them, if not most, operate on a foundation of moral relativism, they have no problem exploiting your decorum. And it's a true Achilles heel, because the conservative people assume, you know, or more right thinking people assume that we're all operating under the same sort of moral apparatus. And we're not, we're just not. And that's not to say that there's no moral Democrats. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's just that they really believe that ends can justify the means no matter what those ends are. And if the last 4 years hasn't proved that to people, then I don't know what will.
And that's why they win in the culture war, is, you know, quote unquote culture war. It's because of that moral relativism, and because they're willing to do whatever they feel, you know, like you said, they can do whatever it takes. And if they gain or retain power, that's all that matters. And that is, and that's a really useful tool to manipulate people with.
Right. Yes, it is. And I mean, it's
especially if you're afraid.
Yeah.
People then extremely afraid.
Sure. And the right is definitely not above using fear tactics. You know, the whole war in Iraq with weapons of mass destruction, which, by the way, somehow the corporate press gives themselves a pass on this. Dude, I remember the lead up to 2003. They never stopped playing videos of computer-generated images of nuclear factories and the beds of freaking semi-trucks and stuff. They championed that war every bit as much as Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton and you know, George Bush and Colin Powell. They were all about it.
That's their club. There was a real big video. I tried to share it around a bunch, but it was, I think, worth the cost. I think Danny Glover narrated it, but it was all about Biden and how he sold, you know, going into Iraq.
Really?
Yeah.
And didn't he, didn't Danny Glover come out and support Joe Biden for this election?
Yep.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's the thing. I can't remember whether I tweeted or not, but I definitely wrote it in my little, I had like this little note file that I'll write tweets and try to decide whether I should hit send on them. And sometimes I just skip the note file, as I'm sure you've noticed, but
hey, sometimes that's the best material.
That's right. You know, it's always amazing which tweets go big and stuff, but I said either publicly or privately, if these people vote for Joe Biden, fine. I don't care who you vote for. It's not like I'm not a big, honestly, I'm not like the biggest believer in our system right now, but
you're in fine. Good company.
Okay. But fine. Don't ever, that's like, whatever, dude, for real, but don't come to me and talk about, brown kids in the Middle East getting bombed or, you know, never ending wars, or tell me how anti-war you are ever again, because you just elected the dude who was VP. He's been on the wrong side of every foreign policy decision ever
since 1978.
Yeah, right. He was even on the wrong side of the Bin Laden raid, for hell's sakes. You know, the one thing that made sense, you know,
the father, not the one thing, civil asset forfeiture.
Yeah. And the crime bill. And I mean, we can go on, but the Obama, they called him Obama, right? You know, the Obama administration bombed Drummer more people. Chief. That's right.
His hellfire
missiles. Deporter in chief built the damn cages. I mean, just all of the stuff that they were leveling at Trump, the Obama administration did at least to, if not to a higher extent, you know.
Oh, and that's the thing. And I heard somebody say, well, at least when Joe Biden was VP, they didn't start any new wars. I'm like, try five.
Who said that? Yeah, I mean, you've got to be delusional. Yeah, Lebanon, Syria, where else? What were they doing in Yemen? There you go.
And then
Libya.
Yeah, and then there's two other African countries that we know of.
Right, and then I'm sure we both have friends operating over there a little bit, and you know, it's. Well, they brought back the slave trade in North Africa. So
yes, they did.
Like I mean, but I just will not be lectured at.
What does it make? What difference?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right? That's right. Yeah. At this point, what difference does it make? Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you're one of the people being sold in a freaking cage, it probably makes a difference to you.
Yeah, exactly. It's just.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. And the thing about the Benghazi stuff, and I'm no expert on Benghazi, but the thing that was, I think, frustrating was all of us can handle, we're used to our leaders doing dumb crap and putting us in stupid positions. We're used to it. That's, you know, that's what they do. But to do it and then to try to lie about it over and over again, I think that was what fired people up the most. Try to blame it on a video and all this. I mean, we're getting down to the, but yeah. So that's my biggest frustration here. Is it like Trump continued drone strikes or whatever? Fine. But he didn't bring us, he's literally the only president in my adult lifetime that didn't start a war.
Mm-hmm. We know that when he bombed Syria, that was the only time that all of the news said that he was presidential.
Did.
I mean, they were,
yeah, it was amazing.
They were real proud of him that day.
Yeah, until it was, you know, bombing Soleimani in Iraq, and then he was going to start World War III, you know.
Right.
So it's definitely they pick and choose. But yeah, you're right. The only time they ever, I think, I can't remember the exact headlines, but they were certainly accusing him of being presidential for once. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And yeah, I guess I'm fired up because I'm frustrated at being lectured. I'm tired of being lectured at by overeducated, well,
midwits.
Lectured at by, yes, yeah, midwits, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know who came up with that term, but I hear Michael Malice use it sometimes, and I completely agree. It's.
I got it. What's that dude's name? Vox Day.
Okay.
I've heard him do it.
Is he the guy that came up with the term the cathedral?
It might be. He does the dark stream.
I haven't heard it or anything. I don't know anything about this guy, but I know that Michael Malice, I listen to sometimes, has said that that he didn't come up with the term cathedral, but it is very useful term.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you like the whole Vin Armani talking about magic. Hmm. And you can almost, we used to joke around and saying, look, they're mixing up, they're using all their wizard words. Cause it's like, they're lying as the things going on in the background behind them. And they're saying it's not happening. It's like, they're trying to weave some spell, like, oh, there's nothing to see here.
Yeah. But like the riots were so famous. Yeah. I mean, like that one screen cap, it was Julio that posted it, that I saw at least, but the Chiron says mostly peaceful riots, and the journalist is literally standing in front of a burning gas station or building or something.
I think it was like a low income housing unit
that just got built. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean,
but that was all right wingers anyway.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the Proud Boys. And who else do they blame it on?
Boogaloo Boys.
Boogaloo Boys. Yeah, White Supremacist Inc.
I'm like, that's even real? I thought that was just a bunch of memes we made up.
That's what I thought it was too.
And then I saw people standing up. I'm like, man, those are cops. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, same thing happened with Gold Corp, right? It was a goof, and then got a little out of hand.
It was just a joke.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with jokes. Some people just take them too far.
True. I mean, Gold Corp obviously never rose to the level of being mentioned at a presidential debate, although it would have been cool if they did. But
oh, I know.
But yeah, man, I don't know. This whole thing has just been a tragedy in the Greek sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I wonder when there used to be malls. And right. You would stand there, it says, "You are here." And I wonder.
Oh, yeah. Those, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder where on the life cycle of a democracy we're at.
Well, yeah, I don't know the answer to that. Whether we've crossed the precipice or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I do know that the 17th Amendment, that was in a lot of ways, in my opinion, at least the beginning of the end. The Constitution, I understand that. Well, I understand both why conservatives hold it in such high regard and, sort of why they cling to it. But it's virtually dead, man. It's,
yeah, no one pays attention to it.
No. And the Democrats have even, or I shouldn't say, the Democrat, like DNC, I'm not even talking about progressives because I actually tend to like those people better. But, I disagree with them, but at least they're honest all the time. But
yeah, it's not so much like, it's more of like, well, I respect it because you're telling me who you are.
Correct. Yes. I can handle that. And I'm open to those kind of conversations, but like the DNC used to play this game where it was, we love the Constitution too. We just interpret it differently. Well, I mean,
that was
good luck getting Democrat. That slipper. Yeah, that's right. And you're never going to get that slipper back on this bloated, and crushed and swollen foot, because no one should ever believe that again. That's just, there's no way. And maybe they will. And I think what we're seeing, man, is the power of the corporate press is still real. And I think that's why I'm so, bothered and wound up, because I thought it was dead and it's just not. They're still, they're maybe even stronger than they used to be. And I guess that's what I'm most frustrated by in this whole thing.
Yeah. It's almost like this last year was a flex.
Yeah. That's, I'd never thought of it that way, but it's true.
And it's like, with all the craziness and weirdness that's gone up, that went on with the election, it's almost like it's a flex, and it's like, they didn't really do a good job of covering it up. And it's kind of like, see, we'll do it in front of you with you watching, and you still won't do shit about it.
Yeah, because the GOP won't. But then you have to remember, too, that it is possible. I'm not saying this is what happened because these anomalies, you know, I'm not a mathematician by any stretch, so, or a statistician or any of these sorts of things. But the anomalies look absolutely absurd. You know, like, of course, that one famous graph that's already become a meme, which is, there's been some great memes out of that. But it is possible that Donald Trump is like the Floyd Mayweather of politics, where, you know, he can draw, but like 49.5% of the people are there to watch him fight. And then 51% are there hoping, or, you know, 49.5% are there hoping to watch him get his butt kicked. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Right.
It's possible.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm just saying there's plenty of stuff that needs to be looked at, but then it's like, you know, the government finding itself guilty of wrongdoing is never going to happen.
No. Okay. So you're right about that. But the problem is, when people talk about conspiracy, they always imagine like this dark room, big figurehead and all that happening. It could be that that happened, but you don't need that to disrupt an election.
No.
All you need is enough individuals that are passionate and convinced that they're right to start acting as individual sort of saboteurs.
Oh, sure.
And that's entirely possible. And at that stage, if we were to find out that that's what happened, then you have to prove, you know, that 1,000 different people committed a felony. And maybe you can, but can you do that in, you know, 17 days or whatever, 37 days, I think, is when, from election day to when Al Gore conceded, you know, whatever it was. So, okay, you have a month. Can you really prosecute 1,000 people in a month? I don't think so. And if not, then how in the world do you get to the Supreme Court? I mean,
yeah. And that's assuming the Supreme Court would side with Trump.
Right. And that's assuming that there's, yeah, correct. And that's assuming that there's even something actionable anywhere. I mean, I think we all know what we just saw.
Yeah.
Like the Democrat, the DNC pushing for mail-in ballots in all of these key states was the most obvious sort of low-key move that I've ever seen, you know, like Loki as in like the Norse god Loki, oh, you yeah. know, just chaos on purpose, you know, chaos as a feature and not a bug. It just was so clear. And dude, they know that there are actors in Philly that are willing to do terrible things. They know that. They absolutely know that. Oh, so sure. This was a smart, it was Machiavellian. It was intelligent. And yeah, I guess what I'm saying is too many of my friends are holding their hopes on this, you know, this SCOTUS decision. And I don't even know if you're going to get to a SCOTUS decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I
don't think it will.
I don't either. No, I don't either. I think it's done. The thing that the GOP should be, and it seems like they probably are, but that they should be most worried about is getting Georgia figured out, because at least then you don't have Kamala Harris running the Senate. Like, everyone's talking about Schumer, but if it's 50-50, Kamala Harris is the deciding vote on everything, and right. they will get through every single thing they want. You know, you'll have Puerto Rico will be a state. They'll pack the Supreme Court. DC will be a state. I mean, they're going to go for it. Banning the Electoral College would be, or abolishing rather the Electoral College would be, I don't know if they'll ever, I don't know if they can really get there. But they'll go for anything they possibly can. Yeah. And you know, the other thing Dems are so good at that the GOP is not, and you see this in spending, right? But they will ask, they just understand how to get crap done. And the GOP doesn't. They'll ask for 10 times more than what they really want. And then the GOP will concede 4 times more than mm-hmm. they really wanted to give up. And they go, yeah, look at that. We saved ourselves. Like, no, you didn't. You know, you didn't. You gave them exactly what they wanted, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, there's been more gun control passed under Republicans than there has under Democrats.
Right, right. And that's the using decorum against you thing. Because in those more like tenuous races, Democrats will spend a crap load of money in these swing states. They'll spend a crap load of money on gun control ads, and the GOP senator or congressional candidate will capitulate because they feel they have to, he or she feels he has to win their race. And so they vote that way because they're scared. Like the Democrats are just better at politics than the GOP. They just are. The GOP really sucks.
They really are. They know how to play the game too. And they just lead the GOP around by the nose.
Yep.
And the thing is, there's a way to have, you know, to have good principles and not be a coward, you know?
Well, I think Thomas Massey has done a pretty dang good job at that.
He's like the one. And then before him, Ron Paul.
Ron Paul. Yeah. I loved Ron Paul too.
But no, Thomas Massey is legit. I like him a lot, actually.
Yeah, me too. Even just forcing all those dorks to vote on the $2 trillion coronavirus bill. And Trump campaigned against him, you know, or at least did online.
Oh, yeah. He was pissed.
Yeah. But all he was doing, the corporate press tried to paint it as Massey was holding up the relief package. He wasn't. All he was trying to do is force a vote. Yeah. That was it.
He was like, oh, no, I made everybody do their job.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. What a freaking joke, man. He gets it. They don't. But the problem is, unless you had 250 Thomas Masseys, like nothing's going to happen, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, it's not. I mean, you even look at Justin Amash.
He
was supposed to be. He touts. I mean, he says he's a libertarian now, but I mean, that's just piss poor.
Well, he's libertarian in the way that Nick Swalwark is a libertarian, or whatever, however you say that dork's name. You know, he's a person.
He's a spook.
Well, I mean, who knows, right? But he's a person that would vote. Ran as a Republican because he knew that was how he would win. But given his druthers, you know, if there was no two-party system, he would vote Democrat more often than Republican. And, you know, I don't know. You just, yeah, Amash is LP Inc. as far as I'm concerned. And the LP is a joke.
And they're no different than the other two parties.
No, you know, in fact, and they're just getting worse.
No, yeah, except for, I mean, they're trying their hardest to run off all actual libertarians. Like the only, like the caucus, like the Mises caucus, those guys are good.
Right.
But they're stuffed in the corner. You know, if you go, you know, further west, out closer towards LP headquarters, you start, you know, running into communists and anarchists.
Yeah.
Like someone, they call themselves anarcho-socialist. I'm like, those two words don't go together.
I know. And they'll try to say dumb crap like, well, what we really mean is free to form our own communes. It's like, bitch, you're free to form your own commune right now.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You can go do that right now.
Yep.
Sure. Like the tax stuff, but guess what, dude, if you started a nonprofit 501c3, anarchist socialist commune, you could get that sucker. I know, because I've had a 501c3. You could get that thing tax-free in a second. A lawyer could make that happen 100%. So they're just full of crap. They're totally full of crap. Yeah.
It's just a lot of big talk and just people trying to sound smart, and they really just don't know what the hell they're talking about, and they're never going to do anything anyway.
Yeah, and then there's an additional problem. So the libertarian arguments for economics are sound insofar as they're in an isolated system. Mm-hmm. So if we were, you know, if we were old America where we weren't doing as much import export, then it would work. But the problem is, if you if you do all of these free trade like TPP, this kind of stuff, and just free trade globally, if you go that route, countries like China will always be able to exploit you. They always will be able to, because if they go full communist, they will be able to create goods for cheaper than you can create goods. And because they don't care what happens to their populace.
Oh no.
So it's like, it works in a bubble. It shares some, and of course I'm just some dumbass horse trainer in Idaho. You know what I mean? So like, take everything I think with a grain of salt, but it works insofar as that you can live in, like in your own sort of firmament, if you will, you know, you remember when we were kids, those Christmas things where you could turn it upside down and then it would snow globe. Snow globe. So long as you had your own snow globe that was totally isolated, those arguments would probably be great. And you would definitely prosper. But unfortunately, that's not reality. It's just not the reality that we live in. So other countries will be able to exploit you if you do that, so long as they don't care about human rights. And then they can use the NAP against you even too. Cause you could say, well, look at what you're doing with Uyghurs. Well, the average libertarian has the argument has to be not my business, or else you're going to have to explain how that's not a NAP violation, you know? So libertarianism is interesting, but I just don't think it works. And we're also to the level now in our country where so much power, because of corporatism, power and money has been amassed, that there's like, implementing libertarian policies would backfire. This is just my opinion, and I know my libertarian friends are going to disagree, and I'm okay with that. But implementing libertarian economics at this point would backfire so freaking hard. Here's why I think it would backfire.
Well, the whole world's tied into Keynesian economics.
Like, right.
The whole system's built on that.
Yes, and corporatism has taken root so strongly that through libertarian means, I'm not sure that you can get to a free market at this point. And we all know this from playing Monopoly as kids. If you think of it this way, the way you know the game is won and it's done and over with, and the next person can never win, is once so much of the board space and money is amassed, there's no way to come back. That's how you end the game of Monopoly. Well, I mean, listen, we are at that point. There's no way that we're not. And I'm a fan of Amazon, so I'm not like hating on Bezos, but the amount of the idea that a new Amazon is going to crop up, that's not going to happen. It ain't going to happen.
Oh no.
So like I just don't see how libertarian economics gets you out of that, you know, gets you out of that place. And I think Trump saw that. And if you look at like Biden's plans right now, you know, this return to normalcy stuff, he's going to increase the corporate tax rate, go back to something, if not TPP, very close to TPP as soon as possible. And then he's going to raise the minimum wage.
That USMCA thing was almost 70% word for word TPP.
Sure. And the next one will be worse. Yeah. And then he's going to implement or at least try to implement a mandatory $15 an hour minimum wage. Well, what in the hell do you think companies are going to do? They're going to move to China and everybody or wherever, Bangladesh, you know, and everyone can try to scream and piss and moan about how they shouldn't, if they were patriots. They are legally obligated to do what is best. Once they're a certain size and they're trading on the stock market, they're legally obligated to do what's best for the bottom line. They're bound by law. And so basically they're under those circumstances, they're bound by law to move to China. Really? I mean, I know that it's not written directly in any way, but you see what I'm saying? It's like,
well, yeah. I mean, that's just the natural choice. I mean, I'm not mad about it. I wouldn't be mad if someone did it. I'm just like, that's a situation they're dealt. And if it was me running that business, I'd probably do the same damn thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, if not, you'd get prosecuted. I'm saying? And yes, it's also the most logical choice, but in the banks, the banking industry, I mean, my word, this whole, and of course we, I'm sure agree on Fed and all of that, but we're just at a place where I'm just not sure that libertarian means can get us out of the hole that we're in. Put it like that.
I think it would have, it either would have had to happen prior to 1913.
Right.
Or that it'd have to be like a total collapse and try to rebuild. But, you know, some people, you know, are kind of hoping things collapse, but I'm like, it's not going to make things better. You know, there'll be something worse coming out of those ashes, you know?
Yes. Because you also have to remember the collapsitarian argument. I understand where accelerationists are coming from. I think, like, perhaps I'm getting some things wrong and I'm happy to be corrected, but I think I understand where they're coming from. But you have to remember that we are still, no matter what happens to our economy, we're still the world's premier military power. And we're either number one or number two in nukes, depending on what you believe, nuclear power. There's a 0% possibility that the rest of the world will allow this country to collapse. There's no way. It would be chaos at a level. There's just no chance. There's a 0% possibility. So if you're a collapsitarian, and please, you know, if you are one, I guess, correct me, but if you're a collapsitarian, you're going to have to explain to me how you're not actually ushering in a military state, because that's what you're, and I mean, I'm talking like straight, like everyone says police state, but I'm talking straight martial law everywhere.
Yeah.
Like I live, put it like this, I live sort of, you know, with, I definitely live closer than I would love to be to INL, the nuclear laboratory here in Idaho.
Right.
No one, including, say, Great Britain or Canada or Australia or any of these people, or countries rather, are going to allow INL to fall into a true, you know, sort of anarcho state. They're not, there's just, it's just not going to happen. There's no freaking way. There's too much informational power and, well, quite frankly, potential global harm on that facility. That's not going to happen. And then, like, some of my friends, and I like to joke about it too, about the UN coming in, they say, well, I'm going to collect robin eggs or whatever. Okay, fine. But let's say
this is dark humor.
Right. And I love dark humor. So I'm all about that. But if you're a person that actually believes this kind of stuff, let's say the military ordered, the government ordered the military to sort of, you know, march on its own citizens, and specifically conservative minded folks or right leaning folks or whatever. What would happen, this is just gaming it out in my head, right? What would happen is the order would come down, Frago comes down, right? And it hits platoon level or company level, and everyone within these platoons goes, yeah, I'm not doing that. So what do they do? Well, I know what I would do, and I assume that that everyone else would do the same. They're going to leave and go take care of their family. So now you just abandon Fort Hood, and the government says, okay, we need help. Our military just abandoned us in the UN lands. And sure, they're a joke, but now they're the best armed joke in the world, because they just, now they have every piece of equipment in Fort Hood. Like, I just doubt that at the company level, guys would say, okay, well, I'm not doing that. And I'm staying here because I'm not allowing you to take, you know, this specific M1 Abrams or what.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of E4 mafia types going shopping on the way out.
sure, absolutely. Absolutely, but you're still disarmed, or not disarmed, sort of underarmed and disorganized.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I just think that there's a lot, and this is all, you know, basically Bohemian Grove type shit that we're, you know, but I guess my thoughts are we have got to find a way to break the system that stays constructive, right? But break it because it's broken already and just let it break, but do it in such a way that's constructive and beneficial for everybody else. And I don't see how you do that outside of it, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard one to game out because there's so many factors. But yeah, now I see where you're going.
And there's been some crazy, I'm sorry for talking so much, but
that's why you're here.
Sorry, man, I'm just freaking rambling, but there has been some crazy cultural precedents set that are going to play out in a big way over the coming, say, decade or so. Mm-hmm. But we like to make fun of Antifa. I think they're a joke. We all know they're a joke, but you know, I always call them limp-wristed dorks or whatever, because they are. But they just set a precedent that if we, you know, kick our heels on the floor of Walmart enough, that we'll get what we want. So it's basically like the toddler in the aisle of Walmart. I've heard a lot of people make this analogy, and I'm going to use it because I think it's a good one.
In the cereal aisle.
Yeah. And they're going to leave with their freaking tricks or Fruity Pebbles or whatever in the hell it was that they wanted. And, or, you know, they're getting that to at least to some degree. Okay. So maybe they're not going to get Fruity Pebbles, but they're going to get the Malto meal version, whatever the hell that is, you know, Dino Pebbles or whatever it would be. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that is going to play out over the next 10 years. And I don't know what, like, that scares me more than anything. And so the other thing about limp-wristed dorks is socialist takeovers are always run by limp-wristed freaking dorks. The myth of the proletariat the proletariat is a myth. It's a freaking myth. It was like Lenin was, upper middle class. Mm-hmm. Marx's father was a factory owner. He was a rich kid, you mm-hmm. know, by any standard that you or I would ever,
Che Guevara went to medical school. He was a doctor.
Yes. They're rich kids.
I said this, I was talking to Skip and I was like, they're all mama's special boys.
That's right. Yes. Yes. And they're pussies individually, fine, but they win through the collective, and there's true power in numbers. That's the reason they hold their dumb fist up, you know, with their fingers pointed towards you and all that bullshit. It's not total BS, man. Could it happen here? Well, I mean, maybe not, but I wouldn't exactly bet on it. Yeah. I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, the other precedent that's being set that's even scarier than that is if you defend yourself, you're going to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Yeah. Yes, that's definitely part of the plan, because you peel off the strong people first, you know. And I don't know your situation, but I look at my situation and I'm like, listen, man, I got kids and I got to do what's best for my kids. I'm not exactly wanting to go out there and be, you know, hung in the streets or whatever, because I did something dumb. Not that I would ever do something dumb, but I just mean, I don't want to get in some situation. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, even under bad circumstances, that's going to be in my mind 100%. So I'm going to be less apt to defend myself the way I probably should. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure lots of people are feeling the same way, you know?
Yeah. You start rolling it over your head. You're like, where's the line at? You know?
Yeah.
Cause when I was 20 years ago, that line was a lot further from me than it is now, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are feeling that. And I understand why they're feeling it. I totally understand. But guys like you and me, we also know what violence looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that you want to call down. I mean, it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah, I just want to be left alone.
Me too, bro.
I just want to freaking grow vegetables and goats and, you know, go shooting in the mountains and all that stuff.
Yeah, that used to be America.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, Yeah, that used to be the central point of America. It really did. And there's a reason that Davy Crockett became an American icon and not just a Texas icon, because he embodied America, even though he did it for Texas, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, all of America and Texas had a lot in common, you know.
Well, at least ideals.
Ideals, yeah. But, you know, Americans, I still like to think we're cut from a different cloth. At least we used to be. I don't know. It, you know, like I said, I'm only 40, but I remember even back in the late 80s and 90s, you know, it was still all about Davy Crockett and all that stuff. And it's cool to be strong. You know, it's cool to be in shape. And, you know, now, yeah, today they're saying that being in shape and being on time is white supremacy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that's not by accident. Right. That's completely intentional.
Yeah. That's the part that's why it makes me even more angry, because it's on purpose.
Right. The destruction of statues is in many ways a distraction. It's terrible and it shouldn't happen. You know, if you want to have a conversation about moving certain monuments into museums, whatever, I'm open to it. But the destruction of those is, yeah, you just don't get to do that. But the reason I say it's a distraction is you do all of that and, you know, dads and moms get all fired up and they get, you know, they get on Facebook and boomer out and all this stuff. But at the same time, they're not paying attention to what's going on in their kids' school. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, like which Robin DiAngelo book their kids are reading, like that stuff is ugly, but it's superficial. The real bad stuff is happening in our kids' brains, and that's what's destroying America. And that's not new. That's been happening since, well, I mean, Barney the Dinosaur. I know like people are going to call me Alex Jones for talking about Barney the Dinosaur, but this whole, I love you, you love me, you know, I can't remember we're a happy family or something. I can't remember the song or whatever, but my little brother and sisters were at that age as I was growing up. And so I saw it all the time. It didn't ring any weird bells other than I thought it was lame as fetch, you know, when I was a kid. But right now I look back at that and it's like that whole thing, that is actually building socialist principles into the heads of little kids. That's what that is. They might not think so, but that is what that is. Because you're actually not capable of loving someone that you don't know. Like this whole thing of that you can love a person that you don't know, that's not real. You can't. Mm-hmm. It's not possible. So all that does is enforce a sort of collectivism, and it reduces, you know, what's often referred to as the smallest individual or the smallest minority, you know, the individual. Mm-hmm. So it at least reduces the appeal to individualism, and individualism is what founded this freaking country, and not just this country, but the West. You know, it was started in Rome or Athens. It was started in Athens, let's say, and you could even argue in Jerusalem, I guess. You know, Judaism sort of started this idea to an extent, and then, of course, the Greeks, which I guess predate Judaism, depending on what you believe. But you understand what I'm saying. So yeah, you have these two places where.
I mean, I was going to say Jesus only had 12 disciples and he was really only tight with three of them.
Sure.
You know, he was the Son of God. So, you know, it's just everybody, you can't be friends with everybody. You can treat each other with a certain level of respect, but
yes. But the only way you can actually treat people with respect is if you believe there's a spark of divinity within the individual. Mm-hmm. And this is where collectivism and communism always fails, because they don't believe that there's any worth in any individual. That's why it always ends up like random people in rural areas buried in freaking, you know, mass graves. Mm-hmm. Because who cares if you kill that one person, because the greater good, you know, all hell, the greater good. That's the problem. So you, America and the West in general was more so America than anywhere else, honestly, was anchored in individualism. Like where I live, one of the places I hunt is, or one of the places I stay when I go hunting is a trapper's cabin. I don't know how old the freaking thing is. It's way, way over 100 years old, way over 100 years old. So it could be 140, 130. I don't know. It's old. And that dude, whoever that was, went up there and cleared out this meadow. And now I turn my horses out in the meadow because there's no pines in it. Cleared out that meadow, built a house out of it, and then lived up there and traveled, you know, once or twice a year to sell pelts at the rendezvous. And otherwise he was just out there fending for himself. No doctors, no. And I understand, you know, that's bad, but, or there's a part of that that's bad, but the spirit of that, you know, that's like, okay, screw it. I'm going to go up and live on this freaking, and the valley that it's in is, man, it's like 8,700 feet in Idaho. That is no joke. You know, I'll bet you there's more than a foot of snow on it right now already. And I'll bet you, so it's 20 degrees at my house, roughly, maybe it's 17. I'll bet you it's 5-6 below there right now. And in the winter it's 40 below, you know, and that dude just went up there and did it, you know,
legend.
Yeah. But that was all over the West, right? Like that was
the norm.
That was what it meant to be. Yeah. That was a norm. Yes. Well, it was, it at least defined the norm.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the benchmark.
Yes, yes, yes. That's why they wrote books about them, you know, dime piece novels about gunshoot slingers in the West and all this stuff. So America did a lot of things, but the only two things that we did uniquely were, some people would argue that the West is the only thing that was truly unique to us, but I would say the only two things that we did that were truly unique was, one, we fought a revolution against the, you know, superpower of the world, and won, and took that and actually truly did build something better than that place that we fought off. Cause that's not usually what happens in violent revolution. It gets much worse, you know. Mm-hmm. Installs a dictator. We didn't do that. We set up a government, and then we had a guy who wasn't some kind of genius. Washington wasn't a genius, you know, but he goes in and wins this war and then serves two terms as a president, but it may have only been one. I can't remember. I think two though. Is that right? Two?
I can't remember.
So either way, they all but offer him a crown, and he turns it down and says, no, I'm going back to be a farmer. You know what I mean? So he, in a lot of ways, created a political norm. Because at the time, of course, the Constitution didn't designate how many terms you could serve, right? That wasn't until post FDR, I believe. But either way, you know, I'm no historian, but I'm just pointing out.
But those guys, like, even under the Articles of Confederation, no one wanted the job. So, like, they would serve a year.
Right. Yes. So there was a perspective, a revolution fought, and a perspective established that no one person should be in charge of this thing forever. And it should be in the Constitution itself is a rebuke against one person being in charge. And then, so we had that, and then we had the West, and what the West did was really solidify our identity. It didn't concretize anything in the Constitution, but it solidified the American identity. And there's a reason, cultural reason, that good Westerns weren't made for decades, you know, short of like a handful here and there, like say maybe Tombstone or something. But good Westerns went out of vogue because we had forgotten who we are. And that's the same reason every Western that comes up now sucks. Like Yellowstone is fun, I guess, or whatever, but
Yeah. Appaloosa was pretty good.
I'm not even sure I saw that one,
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So the point is that was our identity was crafted in the West. It, even though it didn't have any dictate on our government, it did make our identity, and culture matters. And we had that culture, and it's gone and dead. I mean, you know, I saw a guy on Twitter say that I talked as if I was a Stolen Valor guy, and I was probably a fake cowboy too. And I was like, bro, I didn't say a word to him about that part of it, but I was like, dude, first of all, I don't pretend to be anything militarily that I wasn't. I was just a freaking complete nobody who got busted up. And two, the fake cowboy thing, bro, I'm one of the few people left doing it every day as a day job. Just like, what are you talking about? But I can see where he's coming from, because so much of it is fake now that it's difficult to recognize. And also, this is not to say that I'm like the world's best cowboy, because I'm not. I know a lot of them that are way better than me. I'm just pointing out that, like, you definitely can't call me a fake one, because that's just silly.
We've gotten so far from it, he can't even recognize what the real thing is.
And that's a sort of an example and a microcosm of what's happened to our culture. Yeah. And until we figure out how to get that part of our culture back, we will never fix this thing. There's just no way. And I don't know how we get that part back, particularly with freaking big tech and social media. And I'm a participant in both of those things. So I'm not even, you know, I just don't know how we do it, man.
Yeah. The other thing is the culture of family.
Sure.
That's a huge one too. And you're talking about the collective in turning people from the individual to the collective. You know, they've really ramped that up, because for the last year, despite what we know now medically, you know, they're still trying to force people to wear masks.
Sure.
And so, you know, everyone's face is covered up. So, you know, there's so much communication that goes on without words, you know, facial expressions and things like that. And so it's removed so much of people's humanity, you know. And I don't wear a mask anywhere. I'll go in and like people to, you know, just look at me and I'll just smile like, hey, how's everybody doing today? You know, I just go about my business.
Yeah.
And then no one says anything to me.
Sure. You know,
I go to the checkout and they're like, oh God, someone normal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so the mask debate, like I'm not a scientist and I have read articles on both sides, but I'm telling you this. I protest masks because I am tired of being told, or I'm tired of the idea that the government gets to dictate my individual behavior. So in other words, I'm open to the idea that masks have some utility. I haven't seen anything that's truly convinced me, but I'm open to the idea that they do, but I'm not going to do it for the same reason that I think something like, I don't know, marijuana is none of my freaking business. It's like the government, I'm tired of people within the government, because I was government TM, right? But what that really is a stand-in for is whoever is in the government right then flexing, right? Like you said earlier. And I'm just tired of that bull crap. I'm just tired of being dictated to. And I think there is some hope left in that. Like, okay, the chances, I wear a neckerchief all year, but especially now, it's cold as shit. I took it off to do this podcast, you know? So I can cover my face, no big deal. But to go, like, say I go in an airport and I wrap a neckerchief around my face, are you kidding? What is it? What is that thing really? It's doing nothing, but people will leave me alone if I do it, you know?
Well, it's like those medical masks that people are wearing. Those aren't designed to be worn outside of a sterile environment. It's just like all this, you know, I don't know. It's just the way I see it, like, how free are we really when they can tell you where you can and can't go, what you have to wear, what you can and can't put in your own body, you know?
Yes. Yes, this is totally my argument. I'm with you on that 100%. And let me give you like an anecdotal example of how ridiculous people have gotten about this mask thing. My wife works in dentistry, and she was working on a patient, and this patient dropped their mask on the floor and then went to pick it up. And she stopped him with her hand and said, "You want me to throw that away, right?" And she said, "No, I got to wear my mask." And she's like, okay, one, you're at the dentist, and two, that floor is disgusting. So like, every
like, I can we've got some here. I'll give you one.
Yes, but you can't wear it while I'm working on your freaking mouth, right? Yeah. But the fact that she felt reflexively without even, this person felt reflexively without even thinking that she needed to re-adorn that mask. That is wild to me because, you know how disgusting dentist floors are? Blood and all kind of crap from other people all over those floors. I mean, of course they do their best to sanitize, but geez, that's about as gross a place as ever. But it's so firmly ingrained into that person's head that they felt, like I say, reflexively, they needed to redon it. And that is, if that's not compliance, I don't know what is, you know?
Yeah. I forget who I was. Oh, no, it was Bill Buport, zerogov.com.
No. Wow.
He's awesome. Check out that site. I think you'll like it. But he was enlisted Navy intel and then went to school and went in the Army intel.
Okay.
And he was saying, you know, questioning authority is like the sexy one, right?
Yes.
He said, but what you really need to do is question compliance.
And I was like, that's powerful.
Oh, wow.
That's powerful.
He's full of that kind of stuff. I'm friends with one of his friends. So, I'll send you some links to some podcasts that he was on, a couple of years ago. I think you'll really enjoy it.
I would be interested in that. That's a very powerful thought. Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm not anti-elite, right? None of us are. We don't go to our neighbor and ask him to do heart surgery, you know, on us. We're not anti-elite. We just want our elites to actually be impressive. And I think I heard Tucker Carlson say something like that. And I just totally agree with him. And I'm not like some, you know, big Tucker Mook. I think he's been pretty good over the last little stretch, but I just thought that was a powerful idea. And I totally agree. Like we're not going to go get on Boeing aircraft and fly to, you know, across the country with just some dork driving the thing, you know, or flying it or whatever. Like, you don't want me piloting your freaking plane. I promise you that.
But just because that dude's a pilot doesn't mean he gets to tell me how I need to live my life.
Yes, right. And so one of the things that our government used to do, or at least originally that made our government better, was the folks who were being elected were representative of the area. And this is one of the things, like, everyone talks about the Electoral College and all this stuff, and it's important. It's very important. But we've gotten to where we elect the wrong people, and because we assume that there's like a DC type and they're the ones that are going to be able to connect with the DC type. So, like, let's say I live in Idaho. I've got Mike Simpson, who's absolute garbage. I've been at the same breakfast as him in DC. He's a rhino through and through, and always has been. But they elected him because he's a dentist and he seemed like the right, you know, sort of the right possible. He seemed like he could fit in, right? Because he's got a strong education and all this stuff. Wrong. That's not who's supposed to be representing our district in Idaho.
I think we need the person machinist and cowboys.
That's right. And yes, cattlemen, mechanics, machinists, engineers, you know, even truck drivers. Truck drivers, like people who are representative of their area. That's who's supposed to be there. But we don't do that anymore because everything is so rooted in legalism. Like,
they just end up serving each other.
Yes. And so they're there to make laws. We've got enough laws. We've got too many laws. That's the problem. Like, the fact that you almost have to be an attorney to be a congressperson, that is the issue. That's the issue. And what we need is someone to go back there and say, listen, I'm not doing that. And this is what I love about Massey, because he's an MIT grad twice over. So he's also kind of part of them, but he represents his district, you know, he represents the heart and soul of his district without playing into the whole Washington DC game. So I love him like more than even his policies. You know,
I saw him out there working on renting on a Fox body in his driveway.
Yeah. Yeah. And he raises cattle and
he built that house with everything that was on the property. And then he's got solar panels running into a Tesla battery that he went and pulled out of a junked Model 3.
Right. he's amazing. Yeah. Yes. And I may or may not have shared some DMs with him. Cannot confirm or deny, but he has been, he has also been open to helping, ranchers even in Idaho and cowboys even in Idaho. And also, you know, soldiers with some different issues. So he does understand the small guy, you know, even though he fits that bill.
He's retweeted me a couple of times. I'm like, I'm just some dude in Georgia.
There you go. Yeah. And I think I was talking to another one of my friends. I don't know if you follow him. Boy, now I'm worried I'm going to release his name. I think his Twitter handle is EMD, but he and I were talking and I was saying, you know, I'm not saying it's a perfect litmus test, but that if you look at the politicians who actually run their Twitter handles or their Twitter accounts, at least partly, I'm sure their staffers also do some of it. But if you look at the ones who do, they have a much better feel of the populace than other people. And they're more trustworthy because of it. Even though Twitter is a cesspool, we all know it is. It's also a way to actually talk to people. And it's like I say, it's representative of your heart in a lot of ways, if that makes sense, as a politician.
Yeah.
Because if you'll sell out your Twitter account, what won't you sell out? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Well, let's talk about some fun stuff real quick.
Cool. Yeah. Sorry for ranting at you, man.
No. It's all good, man. That's it's the smoke pit. So you're going this week to scout buffalo.
Yeah, I am. I guide hunts to, but this year, my good buddy, he drew a buffalo tag in Utah in the Book Cliffs, which is one of the only free range buffalo herds left in the world.
Wow.
And yeah, the area is 200 square miles. So, I mean, it's like, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. So we've got to spend a weekend looking for them and hoping for the best. And then we got to spend the hunting, you know, trying to help them get one found.
Make sure you take plenty of pogey bait.
Yeah, man. And good horses. And
yeah.
I mean, we'll see. And this year it's been such a drought. It's been a really bad drought year out here. Mm-hmm. Really, really bad. So they might be in some ways easier to locate in that they'll be in riparian areas, but that doesn't mean that you're going to know which riparian area they're in. And that's a big old chunk. So
it just narrows it down to a smaller haystack.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. And there's not even a ton of buff on the range. But they're at a place where they have too many, they have weight. They're like a lot of people don't understand that these, at this point, populations of in the West, populations of deer, elk, everything, you know, all the way through all the big game animals, you know, moose, bighorn, goats, all of it, black bear, they're really highly regulated. So when you hear, well, there's not a lot of buffalo in this range, that actually doesn't mean you don't have to manage them. You still have to manage herds in order to protect dynamics, you know?
Right. So trying to artificially maintain balance.
Yes. So what he has is a cow buffalo tag, which is actually way worse because it's actually really difficult to tell the difference between a cow and a juvenile bull. Mm-hmm. And if you were able to, if you were to shoot a juvenile bull, you'd be in deep trouble, you know. You would likely never be hunting again, honestly. So
wow.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to try to make it all work. But the thing that you do have going for you with buffalo is they're I think they're actually in the bovine family, but they might not be. If not, their behaviors are very similar.
Yeah.
So they're up all the time. So you've got all day to hunt rather than, like, as you know, I'm sure with deer and elk, you're really limited to the amount of, you know, the time that they're on their feet is a lot less.
Because they bed down.
Yeah. So yeah, it should be super cool. I mean, we'll see. I'm sitting here in vision. I've got to take three colts because I also have to make it a work project, you know, otherwise I can't really justify the expense.
Right.
So I've got to take idiot horses, and I'm sitting here looking at, but not that they're idiots, but just totally green horses. And I'm sitting here looking, thinking, geez, I don't know how this is going to go with the,
Are those the ones you've been working on recently?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't post every horse I'm working with. I post too much already. If I posted, you know, 10 horses a day, people would go crazy. But
that's a quality content on the timeline. That's actually good. It breaks up. It pushes the power dynamic more to the, you know, towards the good side.
Yeah, you're probably right. Honestly, whenever this election cycle is over, I'm going to be excited to be back to just talking crap and
I don't even like cats, horses. But like I'll see a cat picture, I'm like, that's cool.
I'm the same way. I hate cats, but even when I see, I mean, we have barn cats, but even when I see a cat picture, I'm like, yeah, nice. You know, hit like, boost that sucker.
Who does the photography? Is that your wife that does that?
So my one buddy, it just depends on who's here. There's a guy that's been working on a documentary for a couple years. And, when he's here, then his name's Drew. I think his Twitter handle is I am Drew Seals, but he's mostly active on Instagram cause he's a photographer. But, so if when it's him, they're really good. And then, my buddy, Preach will come out, and he's actually a really good amateur photographer too. So sometimes him, and then the rest of it's just kind of whoever's there, you know.
There's some pretty epic looking pictures on your time on your page.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Pretty,
yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's some of those two guys are really good. My wife occasionally gets some cool ones too, and so yeah, it's whoever's around.
So which do you like better, working with horses or working for the government?
Yeah, right. the consistency of pay is better with the government, but I am much happier being retired.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And my horse race, my horses frustrate me less, you know?
Yeah. At least you can correct the horse.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's in. And if one's too bad, you can just sell it. You know what I mean? And start over.
Yeah. Sell it, find someone that's just as hard-headed as the horse and sell it to them.
There you go. Yeah. Yep, exactly. And there's cowboys out there that can do it, you know, that are like, if they're truly cowboying every day and not like, you know, I day work sometimes, but you know, mostly I'm horse training, but like a guy who's cowboying every day working, he can get a lot done on a horse. Cause first of all, they're just a little bit grittier, but then second, they're kind of in the right positions more often and they're on them a lot longer. So they can just get a lot done. So you can sell to the right people for sure. Yeah. And make a horse.
Some people just get in that headspace too.
Yes.
You know, it's like, you know, working with dogs, you know, psychology wise, they seem to be similar. You know, I've ridden horses. I've never trained horses, but it just seems like in some ways they're giant dogs.
Yeah, no, they are. Yeah. They're actually you know, I've had these arguments with people, but it's just true. I train a few dogs here and there too, for just myself. But, in some ways they're actually smarter, quite a lot smarter than a dog.
Yeah.
Occasionally you'll have like a real dumb horse, and you can, if you're with them every day, like, you know, people get mad at me when I say this, but I can tell within 5 minutes how smart a horse is. You know, I mean, I'm sure guys who are good dog trainers can tell too, but You can tell. And there's a difference between attitude and intelligence, and or attitude and aptitude, right? And so,
yeah.
Like, for instance, if you take a dog, even an older, smarter dog, and you tie him up to like a pole, by the end of the day, that sucker's gonna be wrapped around that pole 14 times and he'll just be laying there, you know? A horse that's never been tied to a pole, as long as he's ready to tie and he's not going to spaz out once he's, you know, nervous, he'll wrap himself around tight, just like a dog. And then he'll pull and sort of kind of, you know, have a little bit of a moment, and then he'll walk himself back out around, even if he's never seen it before. He'll do it every time. It's pretty crazy.
That's how that works. Cool.
Yeah. And then he'll never do it again. I mean, he'll wrap himself up, but it'll never be a problem again. He'll just untie himself. And
yeah. Yeah. I've seen, you know, you just run across some animals and you just make that eye contact and you're like, okay, we're cool. And then you'll run across one and like, this one's going to take a shot at the title.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yep. My dog. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I have a pity that I rescued. And he's great. He has no idea he's a pit bull. And I was joking around. I had him out in public and someone goes, oh my gosh, is that a pit bull? Like, they were scared. I'm like, I go, shh, he doesn't know.
Yeah.
But he growled at me one night and I was looked at him like, who the hell are you talking to? And then he just rolled over on his belly.
Well, that's the thing with an aggressive breed of dog too, is it has to be a person that can handle them, and then they're great, you know?
Yeah. Me and my favorite are super mellow. And so, but we're not beta, you know?
Sure.
But it's just look at it. And my wife, I mean, she'll say something and I'm looking too, like, what did I do?
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It takes a certain person. Like, but Rottweilers, I don't feel comfortable around them. I'm not at that level.
Yeah, you know, and I understand what you're saying. My uncle had two Rottweilers, loved them, and I never felt comfortable around them either.
Yeah.
And I got a Chesapeake Bay Retriever now, first one I've ever had. Cool. And he was a freaking handful. I call him Mike Tyson, but that's actually his AKC registered name is Mike Tyson. Nice. Like his mom's like Roxy Mudleg Duck Stomper. And his dad's like, you know, Red Cliff jumping champion XY, you know, it's just like, and then it's Mike Tyson. But
yeah, the names they get, the same for horses too, like race horses and stuff.
Oh yeah.
The names they come up with are hilarious.
Yep. And it's the same pattern, right? Because you're trying to express the breed and the lineage or whatever the name. But yeah, like he was seriously a handful to get, you know, to get him to where he wasn't too much of a handful, like, frankly. But now, man, my kids freaking crawl all over him. He's the coolest, gentlest dog I've ever had. And but other people are still super intimidated by him, and I understand where they're coming from because he gets standoffish and stuff, but he's gentle.
Yeah. I think for me, it's just, if they know you're in charge, then they're cool. It's when that's in question that they start getting real antsy.
Yeah. Well, and horses are the same way. Yep. It's true. Because anytime you're dealing, well, it is, but it's also a social dynamic, right? Because they're both pack animals. Like, people will call a horse a herd animal, fine, but they live in small herds, you know, in the wild. They don't live in, like, a herd to me is like 20 or more, like an elk will do or whatever. Horses don't do that in the wild, really. You'll see some bigger horse herds, but anytime breeding season's around or whatever, they're in like groups of six and that kind of stuff. But anyway, so those social cues matter, and they need to know where they're at in the pecking order. They will reestablish the pecking order anytime they feel uncertain. They will reestablish it, and then they calm down and everything's done.
Yeah. It's so, like, they do a vibe check.
Yes. Right. So the same thing can happen with riding horses. Is I have to be careful because I can start a horse and get him ready to go, and then give him somebody, and they have a problem, and really the problem was that horse started to feel stuff and they started to feel nervousness in them. Mm-hmm. And then that makes them nervous because now they're like, well, is this person in charge or not? You know? And when I say in charge, like actual leadership, like, can this person lead me through the places that I know they're about to force me to go? And if they can't, then I don't feel very good, you know?
Yeah.
And they get bucked off and I'd be like, that horse never bucked a day with me. I don't know what your problem is, but
it's crazy. Yeah. This guy, Mike Ritlin, who's a dog trainer and former Navy SEAL. He was talking about, you know, working with your dog and he goes, you know, your dog's looking at you and, you know, talking about hierarchy and, you know, pack leadership and stuff like that. And he goes, now, if I came into a room and I just started going, ooh, you boo, you know, just doing all this stuff, you would look at me like I'm a freaking moron, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, your dog looks at you that same way.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know. I think the shit zoo likes it.
Well, they still like to play too, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They enjoy the playful stuff, but it can't be straight dork, you know?
Yep. Well, cool, man. Well, I think we're at an hour and a half.
Crap. Well, sorry for hauling at you for an hour and a half.
No, man. I love it. It's awesome. Maybe you can come back on and tell us how the hunt went.
Yeah, that'd be cool, man. I'll do it for sure.
Yeah. All right, brother. Well, you want to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me at Twitter at Braxton_McCoy. Or my website's BraxtonMcCoy.com. If you want to pick up my book, The Glass Factory, that's the best place to do it because that's the only way I can sign it. It's also on Amazon, but I can't sign them if they're there, if they're purchased there. But more importantly, Stocking Mill is running a promotional event for Shannon Kent and her and Joe Kent and their family. So from now until December 15th, all proceeds are going to help Shannon and Joe Kent's family out for Christmas. So go there and buy stuff. And if you're not a fan of coffee, they're putting together a donation page and all the donations will 100% go to their family. So more important than the Glass Factory, go support them and get some coffee and all that. And I'll put a link on my Twitter if y'all show up or whatever. And I'll put on my own website, I'll put a promo code. If you heard this podcast, I'll just put the promo code Smoke Pit and it'll save some money on the book. So
that's awesome. Cool. That's kind of what I'm focused on now. Like I'm going, you know, it's not just veterans, but it's been that way lately, but, that's just, it was easier for me to connect with, but, trying to have people come on the show that are doing good things and promoting that. And,
sure.
And we can bitch about stupid politicians and then talk about the good work. So
cool.
Well, cool, brother. I appreciate you coming on and that was a good conversation, man. And can't wait to do it again.
All right, Pard. Thank you very much for having me. I gotta go out and feed horses. So
there you go, man.
Okay. Take care, man. Thank you very much.
All right, you too, brother. Thank you.
We'll see you.